Hello and welcome to another live edition of The Face of Pro-Life. Today we have a new face of pro-life to the show, David O'Connell, who is the executive director of Mother of Life Center in Providence, Rhode Island.
That's right.
And they also have a branch in Westerly, Rhode Island. Before we talk about the great work that you guys do with the Mother of Life Center, I'd like to let our viewers know a little bit more about you and your background in the pro-life movement.
Sure.
Have you always been pro-life, or
starting out from a good Irish Catholic family as a young boy and growing up as an altar boy and going through the usual things that we did back in the early 50s and late 50s, early 60s. And then, of course, the worldly revolution in the 60s, 70s,
sure.
and 80s pretty much drew a lot of people away from the faith, away from the way we ought to live. And I guess I sort of rode that wave for a while, unfortunately. But after I got married in 1977 and I had some children in 81 and 84, it became obvious that there has to be some kind of religion in a child's life.
Right.
We have to give them something. We can't just deprive them totally of it. And so in coming back to the church and starting to go to Mass again and starting to live my faith again, the faith that I had as a young boy, it became obvious very quickly that there is something that I didn't grow up with that was going on in society that I just didn't pay attention to in my middle years, in my 20s. And that was the issue of abortion mm-hmm. being legal in the world, and especially America.
So it didn't affect you in 1973?
In the 70s, no. I wasn't really paying all that much attention to it. I was sort of living my own life, not really looking at that. And just going on with a career that I had at the time. So once you come back into the church, you realize there's this Holocaust going
yeah.
on that you hadn't paid attention to for all those years. And I remember being at a prayer meeting in which the woman who was the head of one of the leaders of the pro-life movement in Rhode Island, Anna Sullivan, she came to our prayer meeting invited by the leaders, and they asked her to give a talk about pro-life issues. Well, at that time, you know, she opened my eyes and my ears to the horror of abortion,
yeah.
to the great tragedy and the unbelievable numbers of children who are dying by abortion in America, my great country of America. And as my faith grew, my love for God grew, of course, my love for my fellow man grew, and the weakest and most innocent of my fellow man being a child in the womb. I had to do something. I couldn't do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked in different areas and different pro-life groups where I could learn and get involved and, you know, see where I fit in. That's what I was doing.
So you really felt compelled once you understood the facts that was going on in our own country, that, you know, so many women were choosing to kill their children.
And, yes, yes.
Instead of giving life.
It was just such a great tragedy. I mean, it's really unthinkable. And I think a lot of people in this country, even today, friends of mine, they don't really pay a lot of attention to it. It's sort of off in the peripheral area
them.
Of their life. They're more interested, obviously, in their families, their jobs, their homes, you know, their sports and things like that. They don't really think
mm-hmm.
about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We, being activists, we think about it all the time, and we study it, and we do research, and we listen to speakers, and we really find out the range of evil
mm-hmm.
that's involved in so, so many ways. In the abortion industry and actually the revolution of sexuality that's occurred
yeah.
and all of the bad consequences associated with it in so many directions. So that's what we try to inform
it's
people.
It's funny
of.
when you're speaking with another pro-life person who's done all the research and is like on the same page as you, you know so much, but if you speak to somebody outside of that, and you start talking, it sounds like there's some major conspiracy. You know, you sound like a lunatic. You could not possibly make this stuff up, from Margaret Sanger to the birth control pill to abortion to human embryonic stem cell research to, you know, selling baby parts, from aborted
right.
babies. I mean, it's there's so much evil that all started, you know, really back in the 60s when we legalized
mm-hmm.
birth control.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And when we do the research and we tell people about this, because it's so awful, some people just don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't always bring this up at the family barbecue, although you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let it go by, and maybe you don't initiate it, but it all relates to marriage and sexual relations and conception and openness to life. So if anybody brings up anything from marriage between a man and a woman and all the things that are variations, bad variations of it, or just life in the womb, or, you know, perhaps where a politician stands or the president's stance on life issues, it's going to come up one way or another, right, even if we don't try to force it. And we have to, it's real easy for us to overwhelm people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With all of the knowledge that we have, all of the horror.
And it's easy to get overwhelmed yourself, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it just all comes back to the fact that we've had this horrible thing going on in our country, and you felt compelled to do something about it. And what were some of the things, like if somebody were in your place right now, what were some of the things that you did to try to find your niche in the pro-life group?
Well, the biggest thing was Rhode Island's not a very big state, so there were at that time probably three organizations that were involved in pro-life activism, as we would call it. The first would be the diocese. Diocese of Providence had their own pro-life organization called today the Respect Life Office. Another organization was called Rhode Island Right to Life, and they were also very active, focusing not only on, to some degree, helping women who might need some guidance away from abortion mm-hmm. towards life, women who actually were pregnant, but also with a very big focus on legislation, helping to pass good pro-life legislation and trying to overcome pro-abortion
right.
legislation. So Rhode Island Right to Life did that. The diocese had the ministry through the parishes.
Mm-hmm.
There were 100, at the time, there were 150 parishes in Rhode Island. And so the instruction and guidance on particular topics would come from the diocese to the deaneries, to the parishes, to the parish groups and lay people, and then out into the populace. And there was a third group called Catholics for Life. And that was another independent lay organization, not affiliated with the diocese, not a subsidiary of the diocese, but with its character was fully Catholic,
mm-hmm.
Thoroughly Catholic.
All of the members being Catholic.
All the members being Catholic, or if a non-Catholic wanted to join, they were free to,
sure.
just as long as they knew that our mission statement and our principles and where we stood on specific issues was based on Catholic
sure.
teaching.
You weren't
always.
Going to water right. it down.
No,
right.
we weren't. So those are the three big organizations. So what did I do? I joined them all.
Of course.
And I wanted to find out. When I want to learn about something, I'll do the research.
Yeah.
You'll go to the library. Now you don't go to the library anymore.
Internet.
You go on the internet, of course. But at the time, back in the 80s, the internet was virtually non-existent, at least for me. So I met the people. I met the leaders. I met the people who really knew what was going on from 1973, and in fact, before 1973,
sure.
In Rhode Island, a few very strong pro-life people, mostly women, but men too, organized back in 69.
Wow.
1970. They saw it
wow.
coming.
Wow.
They
that
saw
is
it
pressure.
Coming because abortion became moderately legal in New York.
Right.
Before
in California.
1973.
Yeah.
Before 1973. And of course, they recognized in the early 60s. The legalization of contraception was going to lead to this.
Mm-hmm.
They knew it was going to happen.
Well, they got Humana Vitae.
They had Humana Vitae in 1968, and the Pope pretty much laid it out.
Oh, he was so brilliant.
Exactly, exactly. And so they saw it coming. And so I would contact these people and say, okay, what do you want me to do? How can I get involved? I'm going to lick stamps and send out mailings? And very quickly, I got involved with the March for Life in Washington, and I encourage anybody,
yeah.
if you're just trying to find out what's going on, that's one of the things
yeah,
you should do.
That's the best place to start, really.
Come to the March for Life in Washington on January 22nd every year.
It's like a big vitamin B12 shot.
Well said. That's exactly what it is. You're surrounded by thousands upon tens of thousands of other pro-lifers from all over the country.
Yeah.
Saying the same thing. It's such a boost and it's such an encouragement.
Especially people from New England, like there's such a pro-death area, you really have to search hard to find, somebody who is like-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go down to Washington, D.C., you're just overwhelmed at how many people are like, oh my gosh, you mean all these people think like I do?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's very helpful. That's the other advantage, of course, to join the groups that were pro-life at the
right.
time, is that it's hard to do alone.
Yeah.
It's hard to be, you can be pro-life alone. We are. Each of us is on its own. But we need encouragement because it's a tough world out there.
Yeah.
And the world is, The world with a capital W is not pro-life.
And we always encourage everybody, you know, to discuss the issues. You know, you might not be able to win everybody over, but the more and more you discuss it, the more other people start to think about it. You know, because a lot of people think that the pro-life issues don't touch them. But all the issues that we talked about, you know, birth control, abortion, euthanasia, human embryonic stem cell research, all these things touch you one way or another eventually. Mm-hmm. And just getting people to start talking about it and seeing how really important this issue is in the fabric of our nation.
And we can always start at the basics. You and I, who've been studying it for a long time, and many of the people who've been involved in the movement for a long time, we're looking at many of the ramifications of it. But we should always be ready to go back to the basics,
right.
The very, very basic. Life in the womb starts at conception. God breathes a soul into that one-cell body at the moment of conception. And there's at that moment, the egg cell from a mom and the sperm cell from dad come together. They're not an egg cell and sperm cell anymore. It's a brand new cell. It's not mom and dad anymore. It's somebody else. And at that moment, as we understand as best we can, what God does, He places a soul in that new body, one cell big, very tiny, from that moment on. Mm-hmm. And that human being is going to be the same human being who is born, who turns 20, 40, 90 years old. That same human being at 90 is the same human being he was at one cell.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to remind people. Because that's a human being at that stage, he deserves every right that you and I do sitting here at our age.
Yeah, that we're so willing to fight for. For ourselves.
Absolutely.
We need to fight for the least among us, really.
We do. We do. That's what's called being selfless. We can look and care for our neighbor. Do we care for our neighbor? A lot of people will give something if they get an appeal letter for the poor.
Sure.
For someone who's hungry and in poverty. Someone who is mentally handicapped. Or somebody in need. Who is more in need than a child in the womb? He has no money. He has no clothes.
No voice.
He has no voice. Very good. That's right. He has no way to defend himself. He can't even cry out when he's hurt.
Yeah.
Who is poorer than a child in the womb? No one. And who is more vulnerable than a child in the womb? No one.
Yeah, it's really sad to think that somebody can hurt something so innocent, beautiful.
And let's just look at the numbers, too.
Yeah.
How many children have been aborted in the United States simply by surgical abortion, surgical or chemical abortion? 52 million plus.
And we don't even know if that's even accurate. I mean, if it's anything, it's low because, like you said, we don't know near all of the contraception that causes abortions. And then they don't really have to keep the greatest statistics. You know, the abortion clinics don't. Even though, you know, like your dentist has to keep better records and is, you know, their dentist office is more highly regulated than an abortion clinic. So we really don't know. Mm-hmm. It's at least 52 million.
It's at least that. And, of course, that's since 1973.
Right.
Each year in the 80s, there were 1,500,000 children aborted in America
every
year. And some people are amazed when they hear that. They say, well, wait a minute. I had no idea. I thought it'd be, you know, a few thousand. No, 1,500,000. It's down last I heard, 2007, I think, is the last statistics I've seen. And I think it's about 1,250,000 abortions every year. That's a lot of people who are being killed.
Well, I mean, if you put it in perspective, too, every year we kill way more babies than all of the war casualties from our entire history in the United States.
That's right.
Way more.
That's right.
It's not even close. And that's every year.
And we're trying to get that across to people, how huge the Holocaust is.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was just 10,000, it'd still be a horror. But it's so much more than 10,000.
Yeah.
It's
unfathomable.
1.25 million.
Yeah.
Americans or non-Americans, whoever it is, children. And those people would be our doctors, would have a cure for cancer, whatever it is.
Would be paying into the Social Security system so I could collect something when I'm 65.
That's right. Or they might even just be somebody's friend.
Yeah.
For somebody who doesn't have a friend today. Or we can look at our children. My children are 29 and it's 29 and 25. One quarter.
Yeah, they're friends.
One quarter of the people of their generation are not there. They've been aborted.
Yeah.
Think about
spouse.
That. Think about a spouse. A spouse, that's right. And that's what we have to try to convey to the people. See, it's we have so much knowledge that we don't want to overwhelm people, but
right.
these are just the basics.
Yeah.
These are just the basics about what's happening in this country with that red, white, and blue flag that we love so much. And this country that was defended by our fathers and grandfathers in the wars with their blood, which has so many good principles to it in the Declaration and in the Constitution. Those are good principles of human rights, of treating people properly and giving them their due. And that's been radically overturned. Those rights have been radically and, quite frankly, arbitrarily denied in the Roe versus Wade decision in 1973, when the 7 out of 9 Supreme Court justices said, we're not theologians and we're not physicians, so we can't determine
when life begins.
if a child in the womb is a human person, so we won't say. And that was really a cowardly thing to do, because they did say, effectively they said, it's not a person.
Right. Well, that's exactly what they did in the Dred Scott case to continue slavery.
Slavery, yeah.
So fast forward to how you got involved in the Mother of Life Center.
Well, I was involved with all of those groups, and after a while, you can't do everything.
Yeah.
So I had to pick and choose which group I was going to belong to. So I decided to stay with Catholics for Life because my faith was really growing very strong, and I thought the Catholic character of it would be good. And so it was the Mother of Life Center. I would go to Washington on the March for Life and captain a bus down there and make sure nobody got lost.
Yeah.
And no one has yet.
And that's a miracle right there, you know?
That's
I've
right.
been. It is a miracle.
It is amazing. So around 2000, the year 2000, there were three abortion centers in Providence. And we would pray outside the centers, myself and a number of other people. On Saturday mornings, we'd go out with the rosary, and we'd say the 15 decades and walk back and forth very peacefully. And, of course, there's usually someone, one or two persons, who would be gently calling to the women going in, please let us help
right.
you.
Right. So you'd have a sidewalk counselor available.
Sidewalk counselor out there. Meanwhile, the rest of us weren't shouting. We were praying. And across from this particular center on Atwells Avenue in Providence, there was just a vacant lot. And at one point, after praying there and going to Mass following for a number of years, someone said, why don't we build a pro-life center right across the street from the abortion clinic? So if a girl changes her mind, we can invite her across the street and we can counsel her and give her what she needs to take care of herself and her baby. And a few people said, okay, let's give it a try. And so we went around and shared the idea with a number of pro-lifers and good Catholics and good people in general, who supported us and wanted to make donations. And so that started in 2000, and in 2004, what was called Problem Pregnancy of Providence, it previously existed as a counseling office, but in a rented space. That office moved into the Mother of Life Center. It was open. It was open for the first time.
So it does take some tenacity.
It takes a lot of tenacity, perseverance, and a lot of people.
Yeah.
No one or two people can do it. A lot of people contributed to that. A lot of very kind and generous people.
So you built the building from scratch?
I built it from the ground up.
Wow.
That's right. And it's got four rooms in general, one for counseling. One originally was a bookstore, but now we haven't sold that many books, so we're changing it into a mom's store.
Where they can
get clothes for the babies. And of course, nothing costs real dollars, but what we're trying to offer them is we've got a number of clothes there that has been donated to us.
Mm-hmm.
Different parishes will do baby showers and donate these to us. Some of them, many of them, with tags still on them, never worn.
And that's a fun thing to do for the parishes. So if anybody's out there and wants to put together a baby shower, the pregnancy centers are always looking for donations.
Mm-hmm.
Diapers. Even our parish used to... the ladies group would get a playpen, you know, the pack and plays, which are really, they're gold.
Right.
And they'd just fill it up, you know,
and then
bring us a new, you know, give a new pack and play and all the things in it. And so that's a great way.
Some do it spontaneously. We have one parish, St. Luke's in Rhode Island, in Barrington, once a year. the moms of a particular parish will say, okay, Dave, you know, we're ready. You know, we want to come out and see you. We've put a lot of things together again this year. And of course, I welcome them. And, you know, they're really very helpful. But on the second floor, we also have, thankfully to Bishop Mulvey, when we first opened in 2004, we have a chapel.
Wow.
And we have our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament in the tabernacle there since August 29th, the first Mass that was said by Bishop Boland, a retired bishop. And he consecrated the host and gave communion in a Mass and placed the remainder of our Lord in the tabernacle, and our Lord's resided there. The very special story is that 40 days after that first Mass, when our Lord began residing in the Mother of Life Center, 40 days later, the abortion clinic across the street closed its doors.
Wow. How did you find out about that?
They just came out the door with all of their stuff and said, we're leaving. It was as simple as that. They just left. And they told us. They said, you know, they weren't shy. They said, we're done. We're leaving.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. And it was closed for the longest time. It was closed, in fact, this is the second half of the story. That building couldn't be rented or wouldn't be rented in spite of all the things that the owners wanted to
do.
For, let's see, 2010, for about 5 years.
Holy moly.
And I spoke to the owner and I said, you know, Robert, how's it going? It'd be nice to see the building filled.
Occupied,
who wants
to
see an empty building anywhere at any time? He says, Pete, Dave, people come in, they look around, they leave, I never see them again.
They must get the willies.
Whatever it is. Whatever it might be. So I said, look, why don't you do this? Why don't you write a letter to the bishop and just ask him if a priest could come down and just bless the
place. Exercise the place.
Yep. You and I might have said that, but I said, don't say exercise because he'll think you're crazy. Just ask to bless the place because, Bob, you know quite frankly what's happened in there for 20 years. A lot of death.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of horror in there. And so finally, after a couple of urgings, he did that. And in the end of 2009, people started moving in. And I went across the street. I said, hey, what's up? You guys moving in? He said, yep. And the priest is coming by Sunday.
Wow.
I said, wonderful. The end of the story is this. A priest did come from one of the parishes on either Saturday or Sunday when the doors were closed, those glass doors with the bars on.
Right.
They locked them all. They didn't want anybody interrupting them for the blessing. And they actually said a Mass inside that building. And I've heard from reliable sources that when this priest consecrated the host, this is my body, and raised it, the doors flung open, and they shut. When he consecrated the cup, said the words, and elevated it, the doors flung open and shut.
Okay, so we would think that the evil spirit's just running away.
I do. They were locked doors.
Wow. That is so cool.
And then they rented it.
Wow.
So that's what God does. I'm happy to... I'm not doing anything except what following his lead, and Christ is doing all of this. He's our head, our general, our king.
So now you're executive director. Does that mean you're at the center?
At the center, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday.
Are you a counselor as well?
I don't do any counseling. We have a very, very good counselor, a woman named Marlo Adelag, who has been counseling for about 18 years.
Wow.
Again, she started back in the 80s. She has just got her master's in social work. She's very good at what she does. I mean, I make sure that she has everything she needs. You need anything, Marla, just let me know what it is, because she does a wonderful job. There are some volunteers who she trains, particular volunteers, who have the capability, the maturity, and the faith to do that kind of work, just on an occasional basis. And
now
she
the
oversees
faith is
them.
The most important thing. Because
faith is important. Personality is important. Some people could be, if one particular person might talk to a young woman, the woman says, I am definitely getting an abortion.
Yeah.
It's just nothing in my mind. Some people might get rattled, and you can't get rattled.
Now, just to give the audience an idea, what are some of the reasons that women give to you, or, you know, your organization, that they want an abortion, or that they need an abortion?
Some of them call on the phone and ask if we do abortions. Some of the women already have a child or two children, and they just can't take care of a third. And we'll ask them, well, you know what the development of the child is like? It says, yep. They feel pressured in that way, just by life pressuring them. That's number one. Number two, the first thing we have to remember is it's legal. So in the minds of many people, if it's legal, it's just okay, like, you know, buying a new car and get rid of the old car. It's not exactly that. I don't want to be cynical, but it's just an option that's on the table. Maybe this is the best thing for me. Some people feel maybe they can't afford it, can't afford a child because they already have one, or husband lost his job. Sometimes many of them are not married, and so it wasn't part of their plans to be pregnant.
Well, then.
of course, you know, were you thinking when you slept with the guy?
Yeah.
But they're thinking of going to school.
Yeah.
Or they have a job, or they're looking for a job, or maybe mom just doesn't want the baby, or maybe they're going to be thrown out of the house.
Right.
You know, all the reasons, all the pressures on a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, I'm going to confidently say most of the time, it's not the woman's desire. If everything was going right in her life,
right,
she wouldn't be choosing it.
So that's where you guys come in, because if you can remove some of the obstacles or make things just a little easier for them, those are the clients that you can convince to have their baby.
If most of them don't want it in the first place, we try to find them, have them look at the ways in which they can solve their issues, whatever it might be, whether it's a job or school or whatever. Some women come and they say, look, I'm in the Army, I have a career. And Marla would say, well, what does the Army do about pregnant women in the Army? And they say, well, you know, they allow us a little time off, a little leave to have the child and a little more time to take care of them for a few months. And then to allow it to come back in, start up where we ended off. And she says, well, there you could do that. That's an option. You can address the issues that you have, and your child can be born. See? Think about it.
Yeah.
And we also, one of the big questions she asks, and she does a very good job, as I say, is how will you feel about it if you have an abortion? Have you thought about it? What do you think? What do you think will be the effect after it's over? And you leave the abortion clinic, how will you feel about that? Because a lot of this is emotional.
Yeah.
If you just sit down and think about, okay, A, B, C, like you're doing accounting, there's really no reason to take a child's life. A lot of it is pressure, fears, anxiety, friends or non-friends, a boyfriend saying, you know, I'm going to leave you.
Right.
How many times did that come up? And of course, you and I know he's probably going to leave her anyway.
Anyways, right.
You know, what's the difference? So we try to offer all the ways, and there's always a way.
I think it's important, you know, in any decision that somebody sits down with somebody and just goes through the pros and cons, and or just slows down, you know, to just stop and think. Because if you're, you know, like you say, a lot of times they have pressure. The grandmother of the child would be, I'm not raising another kid, you know, abort it, you know, so she's thinking selfishly, or she's thinking, well, it's going to ruin your life, you know, abort it, you know, so she's getting pressure from her mother, she's getting pressure from the father of her child, you know, you get pressures from all over, and nobody's just sitting down and just saying, okay, let's think about this rationally, and I think that would be good for kids, a lot of decisions that they make, if somebody would just sit down
and
you know, think things through.
And that's what we try to do. And a lot of times it's more questions than answers.
Yeah.
And the woman, the young pregnant woman, she'll come up with the answers just by being led in a certain direction. She says, well, I guess that's what it means. Yes, I can have the child, and I can, you know, finish school, and I can have my career, this is my child, too. It's not just my boyfriend's child.
Right.
It's my daughter or my son, too. I should take care of my child. One of the things, of course, we always bring up is adoption.
Of course. Just going to go there. How do you read
just
my mind?
That's where we are. Adoption is always something that we mention to them. And it's funny because adoption is just seems to most of them to be something strange.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because how many people are adopted every year?
I was adopted.
There you go. And it's like, okay, you know, it's not so strange. It's just a process by which one mom says, I can't raise this child, or whatever, for whatever reason, you end up being raised by not your biological parents, but they are
your parents.
They're your parents. You know, I'm going to let you do the talking. They're your parents.
Yeah.
And they're loving, and they gave you a home, and they loved you, and
That's my big bugaboo, you know, because like you say, you get these girls in, you know, well, I've got my, you know, career to think of, I've got my, you know, schooling to think of, I've got this. Well, you can have all that. Hmm. And if you don't have a place in your life for a child, I'm sure somebody else, you know, I know mm-hmm. somebody else does, you know, mm-hmm. I mean,
that's
really.
Right.
And you just don't have to go through all the risks of abortion. You don't have to go through the psychological consequences. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's just, it's the best of all the world.
It is the best. And, you know, so many times it's not uncommon for the young woman to say, I could never
I
do
know.
That. I could never give up my baby.
How do we change that? That's
but she,
my
but
big thing.
But she could abort the child.
Right,
so
exactly.
It's not logical. It's feelings. It's all feelings.
It's me.
Yeah.
If I can't have the baby, nobody else
mm-hmm.
can.
Mm-hmm. But adoption, any woman who gives up her child for adoption, guaranteed, may have some regrets because of the feeling at the time. But as time goes on down the road, and she'll think about that child all her life.
Right.
We know that. But she'll feel that she did the best thing for the baby.
Right. And for herself, too.
Whereas a woman who has an abortion, how common is it, how very common is it, for them to have regrets immediately or very soon or for a long time?
Yeah.
And sometimes real pain and sadness and sorrow that they have nearly all their life.
Yeah. And we know a lot of women like that, too.
There are 52 million children aborted. There are millions of women who are going through the suffering of after abortion.
We'd like to open the phone lines up.
Good.
So if any of you would like to call in, our phone number is 456-3000. 456-3000 is our number. We'd love to hear from you. Yeah, the other, I think the most heartbreaking thing is when a woman has an abortion and becomes sterile from the procedure.
Yes.
You know, and that's something that they're not told about beforehand. So, you know, you're young and in your high school, college, and you don't have room in your life for a child, but you know, so you have an abortion, and then when you do get married and try to have mm-hmm. a child, you find out that you are sterile from either a pelvic inflammatory disease
mm-hmm.
or some damage to your uterus that won't allow you to have
right
a baby.
Scarring or something to the fallopian tubes, weakened cervix, all the things that can occur that, you know. I'm sure the abortionist has it somewhere in fine print, somewhere on the form, but they're not going to read all that. Remember that the abortionist has a personal gain.
Sure.
For the abortion to go through, a lot of money that he or she is going to make by a woman coming in and having an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
The centers like ours, the Mother Life Center, or any of the pro-life centers across the country, we have no personal gain that we get out of telling the woman
right.
the truth.
All your services are free.
Free. We charge nothing for any of the referrals or any of the information or the pamphlets or anything. The assistance, the guidance towards services, we charge for nothing. So keep that in mind as a woman is saying, you know, who has an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Agenda is not monetary. Our agenda is we love you and we love your baby.
Mm-hmm.
That's our agenda.
And if the pro-choice was truly pro-choice, the movement, like say Planned Parenthood, then you would assume that half the women would choose life and half the women would choose abortion. But when a woman that's pregnant goes into Planned Parenthood, over 90% of the women have abortion.
Oh, sure. As we're outside, you know, and we invite anybody to come and join us, you don't have to belong to any particular group or church or anything to come out on a Saturday, perhaps, or find out where the pro-life people are in their neighborhood and come out on a Saturday outside an abortion clinic and just pray or just walk with us or just watch and see
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
what it is. You'll find we don't have horns in the tail. We are people of faith. By and large, we're people of faith, love of Christ.
It sounds like a nutty thing to do, you know, just I want to go start and pray in front of an abortion clinic. But it's,
mm-hmm.
it's an amazingly peaceful experience. And despite the fact that, you know, you're fighting evil, it really is a great experience. And you meet the best people.
People of faith also, people of prayer. And we know anytime someone prays for someone else, you get the grace as much as the person you're
sure.
praying for, just because God's obviously brought you to the place where you can pray, where you have enough faith at least to say, God, help that person. He's, as we know from theology, he's the one who's speaking through you.
Right.
It's his love that's inspiring your love.
So you've been praying outside an abortion clinic for how long?
On and off for probably, let's see, 86, 96, 2006, 25 years.
Wow. So what did you think of the 40 Days for Life?
40 Days for Life is a very powerful movement all over the country. It's a great organization. And it's one more way to inspire people to come out, to be active for a short period of time. It's always good to have a period of beginning and an end.
Right.
You always
right.
have to do that. I think it's a great movement. And when I get emails from either the local people who are involved in it in the spring and the fall, or from the national 40 Days for Life, giving information about how many turnarounds there are.
That they know of.
And the turnarounds are the women who were going to go in, heard what they had to say outside the clinic, and changed their mind and walked out and kept their baby, at least for the day, and hopefully for till birth and throughout their life.
And it's amazing. It's amazing what how little it takes to change the women's minds, because they really do not want to have the abortion. But we did the 40 Days for Life in Worcester, and my church's day was like on Saturday, say. We had a ton of people there. It wasn't just from our church. A whole pile of churches got together, and we just had tons of people there. But I just had some leftover pro-life balloons that I had from a previous 40 Days for Life, and I just wanted to get rid of them, and I thought it would add a little splash of color and stuff. And so I blew them up, tied them to a sign, and I was there till 7 o'clock that night, and that was when our ended. We didn't do 24 hours. So I just stuffed everything in the box. I didn't even care about the balloons or anything. I just stuffed them. Mm. Monday morning, a man was by himself. He had grabbed the sign out of the box and was just holding it with these stupid, pathetic yellow balloons on it. And a girl walked into Planned Parenthood, and she walked back out, went over to Problem Pregnancy, and she said, "I saw the balloons." And I took it as a
beautiful.
Sign from God.
Sign
it was like,
God.
As crazy
See?
As that.
Yeah. That's a wonderful story. All the turnarounds, you know, a lot of the women who turn around, they're really not sure, or they feel excessive pressure to go in. But by
they just
life,
need something,
life.
Somebody telling them
somebody,
it's
okay. Somebody give me a reason not to go in.
You
know, some of them are like that. And some of them are very young, let's face it, in their teens, 17, 18, 16, whatever, very young. And you're not really sure about life in general, never mind being a mother.
Right.
And the world or a friend or someone else says, "I had an abortion, it's no big deal, go have one."
Yeah, misery loves company.
Right, exactly.
We have a phone call from Mike in Lebanon. Hello, Mike.
Yes, hello. Another question at the beginning. The guest that said that he first started out in pro-life, there was a good pro-life atmosphere in Rhode Island. I was just wondering if the atmosphere was still the same or whether it's gotten better or worse and what caused the change.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
There was a good pro-life atmosphere because there were many, many activists. It was very close to the time of Roe v. Wade. It was still the same generation that went through Roe v. Wade in 1973. It was 1986. It was only 13 years later. We still have a very strong pro-life community spread all over the state of people who are the old veterans, so to speak, but also the youth in schools, whether it's either the Catholic high schools, the Catholic colleges, just among the general schools themselves, as well as the diocese is always trying to reach out to the parishes. That's really probably one of our main growing fields of getting the message out that pro-life has to be stood for by anyone from 12 years old and above.
Yeah.
Middle school, high school, college, you're kids, but you're not kids anymore. Mm-hmm. You're adolescents. And it's time to really, you can come and stand up and be with us.
Yeah, it's a real civil rights issue. I mean,
this is
really the issue of our times. I mean, we really should be able to mobilize the youth. I mean, heck, they're missing a quarter of their friends.
Right. And once we make them aware of that, the magnitude of what's been lost, of the lives lost, hopefully we pique their conscience. And we're trying to educate their conscience, help them form their conscience that you can go through life just consuming things, or you can be a human being and do things and create something, help to change the world for the better in God's eyes. Mm-hmm. So there is, as the caller said, there is a strong pro-life movement, but the world is still really tough.
Yeah.
And the battle goes on, the spiritual warfare goes on, and we're up for it. We're ready for it. We're trying to speak for God and respect life and love life as he
There's
does.
There's still a lot of resources to tap.
There are.
Thank you, Mike. That was a really good question. Mm-hmm. That's a good.
It was. And I'm sure here in Connecticut, I'm sure there are more. I'm sure there's. I get some emails from a few folks down around here from the Friars and from someone else who's further down south who has done the 40 Days for Life. So in any state, anybody who wants to find out, you know, what can I do? I want to find out more about this pro-life movement. You can call probably one of the local parishes.
Mm-hmm.
You can always call the diocese. There are probably other organizations. I think, Corinne, you would know about other organizations down in this way that they can contact to try to... Please get involved.
Yeah.
Please.
And the 40 Days for Life is a great organization to get involved with because, like you said, it's a finite period of time.
Mm-hmm.
It really gets you enmeshed with a bunch of very, you know, really great people. And
mm-hmm.
that's where you can kind of branch out. And you're doing great work in the process.
You know,
just, you know, you're really getting in touch with God, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and
part
asking
of it is,
him to end abortion.
Part of it is being a public witness.
Yeah.
Standing up, you know, people can have their own inner convictions. Okay, I'm pro-life. But you can't just keep it to yourself. You have to live it. You have to be public about it.
Right.
It takes a little bit of courage. God, give me the courage to do it, but he will. And once you do it, it helps you become more aware of what it means to be a human being.
You need to be have, proactive
to
have, life.
To be active, to try to do something, to be active in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a public witness, very peaceful witness, but a public one.
We have another call from Anne from Columbia. Hello, Anne.
Yes?
Did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I had a question for David. When you help a woman that's in crisis, is it just help for the day, David, or do you follow up with her through the birth of the child and help her get on her feet?
We always like to stay in touch as long as we can. Many of the women will come to us and we'll guide them to health care, to get find a good doctor, whatever is available for them, whatever assistance. And we encourage them to stay in touch. Obviously, if she's like in a third month or fourth month, whatever it might be, it's another 3 or 4 months going down the road. We like to let her know we have material support when the baby's born, to stay in touch with us if there's anything she needs in the meantime. So our preference is that she does stay in touch up until birth and after the baby is born, or babies. Some have
mm-hmm.
twins. So we always like that. At the same time, from a professional point of view, if they fall out of touch within maybe a week or two, we'll give them follow-up calls like we always do, but we can't chase them.
Right, you don't want to pound them.
And it's confidentiality. We're here to serve them, not the other way around. So there are a number of women who we see and we encourage, and we ask them to stay in touch, who we don't always see again. But we're happiest about the ones who we see the babies after they're born. And we give them the diapers and the car seats and the baby clothes and whatever they need, and just general emotional support is a big part of it too, just being there, because a lot of them aren't married, a lot of them, you know, aren't wealthy, and sometimes that's a hard life,
mm-hmm.
or more difficult than usual, but we can help them through it, and they're always happy that they decided to give birth.
You never hear a woman
no
regret.
One complains about giving birth though.
That's one of the criticisms that are waged against pro-lifers is that, oh, yeah, you know, you don't want her to have an abortion, but what are you going to do for the girl, you know?
Mm.
And like you say, you do provide support and resources and also supplies, too, when the baby comes. So there's no reason, really, why a woman would need an abortion.
No, not at all. Anything that they come up with, the solution can be made. We have some very difficult situations sometimes, but we encourage the woman to realize that who she's carrying is her son or her daughter. That's what I want to point to. Even if, what's the case if the child, well, my doctor told me that the child is has Down syndrome. We had a woman who was very close. She would never have an abortion. She's a pro-lifer. Doctor told her that her child had anencephaly.
Oh.
Was missing the top of her skull and part of her brain.
Wow.
This is in the womb. Now, is that devastating to a mom? Of course it
is.
And to dad, of course. But if a doctor were to come and say, well, why don't you have an abortion? You can have another child. And of course, this woman says, wait a minute. My child in my womb is not the deformity.
Right.
My child is the person who has a handicap. I'm not going to get rid of my child because he has a handicap any more than I would after he was born.
Right, right.
That's my child, my son and my daughter. Of course I'm going
you
to give
birth. You love him as long as God lets
as
you.
As long as he stays on earth. And this particular one, the child lived for 7 days.
Wow.
And mom was able to hold him and care for him and hold him in her arms and for that short period of time, baptize him, and the family came around.
And that's a gift. That
of course
really
it is.
I mean, I know it's tragic and
yes,
sad to
it's
see
sad.
That you're anybody losing a child, but the thought of killing the baby before the baby was born, look at what she missed.
Yes.
The mother, the family.
What they
look what they missed.
Would have missed, that's right.
You know,
that's
it's... Right. Yeah. It's nonsense.
And this particular family had a funeral,
wow.
and a mass, and a burial, like they would, for any child.
Any child, right?
With a handicap or without a handicap.
Right.
This is a person. And he had a name, and he was baptized, and he was part of the family.
And
they remember
dignity.
Him forever. Sure, that's dignity.
You know, I mean, we
that's
always
right.
talk about death with dignity. Well, that's dignity.
That's right.
Being ripped apart out of the womb is not dignified
not
at
all.
All.
Not at all.
That's so sad.
I know.
And I just can't imagine, you know, we've talked about this before, too. You know, as soon as a woman, especially over 35, is pregnant, the first thing they do is, well, you got to get genetic testing. You got to get all this
That's
testing,
right.
you know, because,
right.
well, why? Well, what if it has deformity? Well, then I guess it has a deformity.
Right.
But you know what they're going to say if they did
sure.
find something.
Sure. We can abort the child. One of the things that we know is dangerous, actually, has a risk to it, is amniocentesis.
Sure.
And they offer that often to women over 35 or any other time. If, because the over 35, there's a higher incidence
percentage,
of
right.
percentage, still very low, but a higher percentage of Down syndrome. So, and they say, well, we'll do the amniocentesis, which is baby basically placing a needle through the mother's belly into the womb to remove some of the amniotic fluid.
Which has cells
which
in
is
it.
Which is around the baby. And taking it out and testing it. But in a small percentage, but a real percentage, I think it's just way under 10, probably 2% or maybe 1%, that can cause the child either to die or miscarry.
Mm.
Just the test.
Yeah.
So we encourage people, unless, if you're completely pro-life, don't get amniocentesis.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
And if you're not pro-life, you should know that amniocentesis may cause you to miscarry that child,
Who
when
could be perfectly healthy.
Perfectly healthy, whatever the situation.
Yeah.
There is a risk there. And so we recommend always against amniocentesis specifically.
Yeah, and of course, I was offered for both my kids, and, you know, the doctor looks at you cross-eyed when you say no, but, you know, you stand up and say, you know, well, it's not going to change my decision. I mean, it's not going to change anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, well, it's going to prepare you. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
Really? What is ever going to prepare me
sure.
for a child?
Some people will look and say, you know what, but when the child develops further, they do ultrasounds.
Yeah.
And in the ultrasound, once the child's maybe 20 weeks, 25 weeks or so, they can see the formation of the child pretty well.
Right.
And if there's a problem, we've seen this many times in the pro-life movement, not just in the movement, in medicine. A doctor, if he sees that there's a malformed heart,
mm-hmm.
or if there's something like spina bifida in which the spine is exposed, the skin hasn't grown over, they can do an operation on that child
right.
in the womb, repair the problem in the womb, and return the child to the remaining time he's going to be in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's nice.
Yeah.
But they don't do amniocentesis to do that. They can do
right.
that with an ultrasound scan. And so think about it, that some doctor at 20 weeks... and the child's 20 weeks along, could do an operation, to heal a child in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman down the street, someone could be aborting that child at 20 weeks and saying it's not a human. I mean,
a doctor's not going to be working on it if it's not a human.
Just doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense.
And I'm sure the insurance company wouldn't pay for it if it wasn't a child
or a
human.
That's right.
We have another phone call from Brian from Wyndham. Hello, Brian.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. Do you have
All right. Earlier in the show, you were mentioning that the Supreme Court said they can't say whether a fetus is a person.
Our agenda is not monetary. Our agenda is we love you and we love your baby.
Mm-hmm.
That's our agenda.
And if the pro-choice was truly pro-choice, the movement, like let's say Planned Parenthood, then you would assume that half the women would choose life and half the women would choose abortion. But when a woman that's pregnant goes into Planned Parenthood, over 90% of the women have abortion.
Oh, sure. Yeah. As we're outside, you know, and we invite anybody to come and join us, you don't have to belong to any particular group or church or anything to come out on a Saturday, perhaps, or find out where the pro-life people are in their neighborhood. And come out on a Saturday outside an abortion clinic and just pray, or just walk with us, or just watch and see what it is. You'll find we don't have horns in a tail. We are people of faith. By and large, we're people of faith, love of Christ.
It sounds like a nutty thing to do, you know, just I want to go start and pray in front of an abortion clinic. But it's an amazingly peaceful experience. And despite the fact that, you know, you're fighting evil, it really is a great experience, and you meet the best people.
People of faith also, people of prayer. And we know anytime someone prays for someone else, you get the grace as much as the person you're praying for, just because God's obviously brought you to the place where you can pray, where you have enough faith at least to say, God, help that person. We know from theology, he's the one who's speaking through you.
Right.
It's his love that's inspiring your love.
So you've been praying outside an abortion clinic for how long?
On and off for probably, 86, 96, 2006, 25 years.
Wow. So what did you think of the 40 Days for Life?
40 Days for Life is a very powerful movement all over the country. It's a great organization. And it's one more way to inspire people to come out, to be active for a short period of time. It's always good to have a period of beginning and an end.
Right.
You always
right.
have to do that. And I think it's a great movement. And I get emails from either the local people who are involved in it in the spring and the fall, or from the national 40 Days for Life, giving information about how many turnarounds there are.
That they know of.
And the turnarounds are the women who were going to go in, heard what they had to say outside the clinic, and changed their mind and walked out and kept their baby, at least for the day, and hopefully for till birth and throughout their life.
And it's amazing. It's amazing how little it takes to change the women's minds, because they really do not want to have the abortion. But we did the 40 Days for Life in Worcester, and my church's day was like on Saturday, say, and we had a ton of people there. It wasn't just from our church. A whole pile of churches got together, and we just had tons of people there. But I just had some leftover pro-life balloons that I had from a previous 40 Days for Life, and I just wanted to get rid of them, and I thought it would add a little splash of color and stuff. And so I blew them up, tied them to a sign, and I was there till 7 o'clock that night, and that was when our ended. We didn't do 24 hours. So I just stuffed everything in the box. I didn't even care about the balloons or anything. I just stuffed them. Mm. Monday morning, a man was by himself. He had grabbed the sign out of the box and was just holding it with these stupid, pathetic yellow balloons on it. And a girl walked into Planned Parenthood, and she walked back out, went over to Problem Pregnancy, and she said, "I saw the balloons." And I took it as a sign from God.
It
was like, that's crazy as that.
Yeah. That's a wonderful story. All the turnarounds, you know, a lot of the women who turn around, they're really not sure, or they feel excessive pressure to go in. But by life.
They just need something. Somebody telling them.
Somebody,
it's
give me a reason not to go in. You know, some of them are like that. And some of them are very young, let's face it, in their teens, 17, 18, 16, whatever. Very young. And he's not really sure about life in general, never mind being a mother.
Right.
And the world or a friend or someone else says, well, I had an abortion, it's no big deal, go have one. You know.
Yeah, misery loves company.
Right, exactly.
We have a phone call from Mike in Lebanon. Hello, Mike.
Yes, hello. Question at the beginning, the guest that said that he first started out in pro-life, there was a good pro-life atmosphere in Rhode Island. I was just wondering if the atmosphere was still the same or whether it's gotten better or worse and what caused the change.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
There was a good pro-life atmosphere because there were many, many activists. It was very close to the time of Roe v. Wade. It was still the same generation that went through Roe v. Wade in 1973. It was 1986. It was only 13 years later. We still have a very strong pro-life community spread all over the state of people who are the old veterans, so to speak, but also the youth in schools, whether it's either the Catholic high schools, the Catholic colleges, just among the general schools themselves, as well as the diocese is always trying to reach out to the parishes. That's really probably one of our main growing fields of getting the message out that pro-life has to be stood for by anyone from 12 years old and above.
Yeah.
Middle school, high school, college, you're kids, but you're not kids anymore. Mm-hmm. You're adolescents. And it's time to really, you can come and stand up and be with us.
Yeah, it's a real civil rights issue. I mean, this is really the issue of our times. I mean, we really mm-hmm. should be able to mobilize the youth. I mean, mm-hmm. heck, they're missing a quarter of their friends.
Right, right. And once we make them aware of that, the magnitude of what's been lost, of the lives lost, hopefully we pique their conscience. And we're trying to educate their conscience, help them form their conscience. That you can go through life just consuming things, or you can be a human being and do things and create something, help to change the world for the better in God's eyes. Mm-hmm. So there is, as the caller said, there is a strong pro-life movement, but the world is still really tough, and the battle goes on, the spiritual warfare goes on, and we're up for it. We're ready for it. We're trying to speak for God and respect life and love life as he does.
There's still a lot of resources to tap.
There are.
Thank you, Mike. That was a really good question. Mm-hmm. That's a good.
It was. And I'm sure here in Connecticut, I'm sure there are more. I'm sure there's. I get some emails from a few folks down around here from the Friars and from someone else who's further down south who has done the 40 Days for Life. So in any state, anybody who wants to find out, you know, what can I do? I want to find out more about this pro-life movement. You can call probably one of the local parishes. Mm-hmm. You can always call the diocese. There are probably other organizations. I think, Corinne, you would know about other organizations down in this way that they can contact.
Yeah.
To try to please get involved.
Yeah.
Please.
And the 40 Days for Life is a great organization to get involved with because, like you said, it's a finite period of time. Mm-hmm. It really gets you enmeshed with a bunch of very, you know, really great people, and mm-hmm. that's where you can kind of branch out. And you're doing great work in the process. You're really getting in touch with God. You know, and, mm-hmm. and
part
asking
of it is,
Him to end abortion.
Part of it is being a public witness.
Yeah,
standing up. You know, people can have their own inner convictions. Okay, I'm pro-life, but you can't just keep it to yourself. You have to live it. You have to be public about it.
Right.
It takes a little bit of courage. God, give me the courage to do it, but He will. And once you do it, it helps you become more aware of what it means to be a human being.
You need to be proactive life.
To be active, to try to do something, to be active in this world. Mm-hmm. And it's a public witness, very peaceful witness, but a public one.
We have another call from Anne from Columbia. Hello, Anne.
Yes.
Did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, I had a question for David. When you help a woman that's in crisis, is it just help for the day, David, or do you follow up with her through the birth of the child and help her get on her feet?
We always like to stay in touch as long as we can. Many of the women will come to us and we'll guide them to health care, to get find a good doctor, whatever is available for them, whatever assistance. And we encourage them to stay in touch. Obviously, if she's like in a third month or fourth month, whatever it might be, It's another 3 or 4 months out going down the road. We like to let her know we have material support when the baby's born, to stay in touch with us if there's anything she needs in the meantime. So our preference is that she does stay in touch up until birth and after the baby is born, or babies. Some have twins. So we always like that. At the same time, from a professional point of view, if they fall out of touch within maybe a week or two, we'll give them follow-up calls like we always do, but we can't chase them.
Right, you don't want to pound them.
It's confidentiality. We're here to serve them, not the other way around. So there are a number of women who we see and we encourage, and we ask them to stay in touch, who we don't always see again. But we're happiest about the ones who we see the babies after they're born. And we give them the diapers and the car seats and the baby clothes and whatever they need. And just general emotional support is a big part of it, too, just being there. Because a lot of them aren't married. A lot of them, you know, aren't wealthy. And sometimes that's a hard life, or more difficult than usual. But we can help them through it, and they're always happy that they decided to give birth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Never hear a woman
No regret. One complains about giving birth, though.
That's one of the criticisms that are waged against pro-lifers, is that, oh, yeah, you know, you don't want her to have an abortion, but what are you going to do for the girl, you know? Mm. And like you say, you do provide support and resources and also supplies, too, when the baby comes. So there's no reason, really, why a woman would need an abortion.
No, not at all. Anything that they come up with, the solution can be made. We have some very difficult situations sometimes, but we encourage the woman to realize that who she's carrying is her son or her daughter. That's what I want to point to. Even if, what's the case if the child, well, my doctor told me that the child has Down syndrome. We had a woman who was very close. She would never have an abortion. She's a pro-lifer. Doctor told her that her child had anencephaly.
Oh.
Was missing the top of her skull and part of her brain.
Wow.
This is in the womb. Now, is that devastating to a mom? Of course it is.
And
to dad, of course. But if a doctor were to come and say, well, why don't you have an abortion? You can have another child. And of course, this woman says, wait a minute. My child in my womb is not the deformity.
Right.
My child is the person who has a handicap. I'm not going to get rid of my child because he has a handicap. Any more than I would after he was born.
Right, right.
That's my child, my son and my daughter. Of course I'm going
to
give birth.
You love him as long as God lets you.
As long as he stays on earth. And this particular one, the child lived for 7 days.
Wow.
And mom was able to hold him and care for him and hold him in her arms and for that short period of time, baptize him, and the family came around.
And that's a gift. That
of course
really
it is.
I mean, I know it's tragic and
yes,
sad to
Very
see
sad.
That you're anybody losing a child, but the thought of killing the baby before the baby was born, look at what she missed.
Yes.
The mother, the family.
Look
what they missed.
Would have missed, that's right.
You know,
that's
it's nonsense.
And this particular family had a funeral and a mass and a burial, like they would. For any child.
Any child, right.
With a handicap or without a handicap.
Right.
This is a person. And he had a name, and he was baptized, and he was part of the family.
And
they remember
dignity.
Him forever. Sure, that's dignity.
You know, I mean,
we always
talk about death with dignity. Well, that's dignity.
That's right.
Being ripped apart out of the womb is not dignified
at all.
Not at all. That's so sad.
I know.
And I just can't imagine, we've talked about this before, too. You know, as soon as a woman, especially over 35, is pregnant, the first thing they do is, well, you got to get genetic testing. You got to get all this
That's
testing,
right.
you know, because,
right.
well, why? Well, what if it has deformity? Well, then I guess it has a deformity.
Right.
But you know what they're going to say if they did
sure.
find something.
Sure. We can abort the child. One of the things that we know is dangerous, actually, has a risk to it, is amniocentesis.
Sure.
And they offer that often to women over 35 or any other time. If because the over 35, there's a higher incidence still very low, but a higher percentage of Down syndrome. So, and they say, well, we'll do the amniocentesis, which is basically placing a needle through the mother's belly into the womb to remove some of the amniotic fluid,
which is
around the baby, and taking it out and testing it. But in a small percentage, but a real percentage, I think it's just way under 10, probably 2% or maybe 1%, that can cause the child either to die or miscarry.
Mm.
Just the test.
Yeah.
So we encourage people, if you're completely pro-life, don't get amniocentesis.
Yeah. No.
And if you're not pro-life, you should know that amniocentesis may cause you to miscarry that child,
Who could be perfectly healthy.
Perfectly healthy, whatever the situation.
Yeah.
There is a risk there. And so we recommend always against amniocentesis specifically.
Yeah, and of course, I was offered for both my kids, and the doctor looks at you cross-eyed when you say no, but you stand up and say, well, it's not going to change my decision. I mean, it's not going to change anything. Mm-hmm. And they'll say, well, it's going to prepare you. I was like, really? What is ever going to prepare me?
Sure.
For a child.
Some people will look and say, but when the child develops further, they do ultrasounds.
Yeah.
And in the ultrasound, once the child's maybe 20 weeks, 25 weeks or so, they can see the formation of the child pretty well.
Right.
And if there's a problem, we've seen this many times in the pro-life movement, not just in the movement, in medicine. A doctor, if he sees that there's a malformed heart,
mm-hmm.
or if there's something like spina bifida in which the spine is exposed, the skin hasn't grown over, they can do an operation on that child
right.
in the womb, repair the problem in the womb, and return the child to the remaining time he's going to be in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's nice.
Yeah.
But they don't do amniocentesis to do that. They can do
right.
that with an ultrasound scan. And so think about it, that some doctor at 20 weeks... and the child's 20 weeks along, could do an operation to heal a child in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman down the street, someone could be aborting that child at 20 weeks and saying it's not a human. I mean,
a doctor's not going to be working on it if it's not a human.
Just doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense.
And I'm sure the insurance company wouldn't pay for it if it wasn't a child
or
a human.
That's right.
We have another phone call from Brian from Wyndham. Hello, Brian.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good.
All right. Early in the show, you were mentioning that the Supreme Court said they can't say whether a fetus is a person.